CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station, broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
No, it isn't. And I'm Sebastian.
And coming up later today, we have an interview with Kevin, the owner-operator of Stroked Ego, a small business operating in the gay village in Ottawa. Mm-hmm. We then discuss really the state and the health of small businesses, especially those in villages, in the post-pandemic world. And then we are also joined by the great folks over at Croma New Brunswick, a service center serving LGBT folks, a service organization serving LGBT folks across the province. As we talk about their efforts to create temporary spaces to support the gay community. So, busy day talking about queer spaces in and out of villages later on in the show. However, right. Yes. We have some other top news before then. We are keeping an eye on, first of all, good news. Very quick good news story. Mm-hmm. The Toronto Gay Hockey Association has just celebrated 30 years of inclusivity. They've been going for 30 years.
In all the years of us reporting gay sports in Canada, I don't think we've mentioned this one before, have we?
The gay hockeys?
Yeah. Oh, no, we did last week, didn't we?
Maybe. Yeah. We are keeping an eye on a whole bunch of stories, but I want to jump to a couple just off the bat that we are keeping an eye on. One is over 1,000 people in Ireland have emailed their official broadcaster, and their emails are regarding a boycott.
Okay.
And now what do you think 1,000 Irishmen would be boycotting on television?
Ooh, God. No, I have no idea. On TV? They don't want something on TV. I don't know. Ireland's a bit of a wild card, because in the 90s they had the Troubles and they were super conservative. And then in the 2000s they became known as being one of the most progressive countries in Western Europe, which is saying a lot. So it's kind of hard to predict. They're a bit of a wild card. Ireland is an interesting place. It's a bit of a wild card. I don't know. I give up on guessing. What's the answer?
The answer is Eurovision.
Oh, what?
Yes.
But they're the second most winningest country. Like, Sweden is the winningest country in the history of Eurovision, followed by Ireland and Luxembourg. But a lot of the Luxembourg wins were at the early years. But yeah, no, that's weird. That's super weird.
As you know, last year or the year before, after Russia legally invaded the Ukraine, they were effectively banned from participating in Eurovision. Right. And with over 30,000 dead following, obviously, the horrific attacks on Israel, and then the truly horrific counterattacks by Israel, with 30,000 dead in Palestine, there is a significant boycott movement to get Eurovision to expel, essentially, Israel from performing in this year's Eurovision. So the Eurovision has been political in the past. It'll be really interesting to see where this particular subject lands.
Okay, yeah, that's super interesting. In a way, it's because the Olympics can also get pretty political, but for some reason Eurovision has, I don't want to say better, but different kinds of follow through that is a little bit interesting. You're less likely to see something like this actually bubble all the way to the top to actual executive level decisions when it comes to the Olympics, because one of the key factors of the Olympics is they want to keep a lot of the interstate politics out of it and make it just a place for sports. But Eurovision doesn't have that beef. They're willing to do that. So yeah, it is kind of interesting to see how this will play out.
Now, sticking to Europe for a moment, a lot of countries in the EU, European Union, are facing significant pressure to harmonize their laws regarding particularly equal rights and equal rights for LGBT folks. Now, the Czech Republic has done a sort of a two steps forward, one step back maneuver. You've been looking into this. So what have the Czechs been doing, except for hunting, obviously?
Well, I mean, basically, there's a bill that passed by a pretty wide majority, almost 3-1, basically allowing same-sex partnerships to be recognized at the federal level. They're not calling them marriages, and they have some but not all rights. So there's some adoption. Like if you have a biological child, then your partner can adopt your child, but a same-sex couple cannot co-adopt a new child. The visitation rights are pretty limited, inheritance rights are pretty limited, co-ownership rights of property is non-existent. So it's this kind of, from what I've been able to see, because they haven't really gone into detail about what is there. What I've been able to find is mostly what's not there. I think it's basically that you can file a joint couple tax return and get the benefits of being a couple. But otherwise, I think they're kind of missing out on quite a few things. But the feds are recognizing same-sex partnerships, and the general attitude there is it's something, it's better than nothing, and this is a weird, why would you go halfway on this? And it does seem to be that the general tone there among Czech politicians is that it will grow into something more in the near future. Whether it'll be full marriage or not, it's in the air. Eastern Europe is generally they don't distinguish between state and religion quite as much as Western Europe. So they may not, they may go full partnership but not call it marriage. Who knows what the future will hold? But they do have this step right now. And there is that, you know, it is two steps forward, one step back, but they're saying, well, we're moving forward for once. So this is good. That's the general attitude of
I want to
the whole
also
bill.
add that you mentioned the adoption. Now, it's worth noting, of course, people can't, a same-sex couple can't just adopt a child in the Czech Republic unless that child is the biological child of one of the couple. Now, the other person in the couple, this is where it gets a bit tricky, the parent of the child has to have sole parental rights over that child. And then once that person is the sole parent of the child, then their same-sex partner can apply to co-adopt that child. But unless in any other scenario, the same-sex couples cannot co-adopt unless one of them is the sole parental authority over that child. So
Hey.
it's not fantastic, but it is better than it was last week. So that's slightly encouraging. We've been following a lot of international news, obviously the death in the US that we've been looking at, but also we have been looking at the recent murder of Jesse Beard and Luke Davies. Now, I mean, TV personality in Australia, TV presenters are very, very well known at the time. And this is a double murder that has really shaken the gay community in Sydney. In fact, the bodies were only just recently discovered, only in the last couple of days. It's worth noting that the alleged murderer of Jesse Beard and Luke Davies handed himself in almost immediately and was a police officer with the New South Wales Police. Now, the Sydney Mardi Gras, which is happening right now, of course, for folks who are hearing this in the Northern Hemisphere, we do sometimes forget that the Southern Hemisphere has all of that wonderful summertime madness right in the middle of February and March. So Sydney Mardi Gras is about to happen, and it's worth noting that when Sydney Mardi Gras made this decision, the bodies were still missing. It was murder by a cop. The bodies were missing. They had made no effort, not the cops, the guy that I'm not going to say his name, but the guy who had been essentially turned himself in, was allegedly not helping with finding the bodies. And the city Mardi Gras issued a statement essentially saying that it would be inappropriate at this very sensitive time to have uniformed police marching in the parade. It's worth noting, as I said, the alleged murderer here was a police officer.
But he wasn't in uniform. He was the ex-partner of one of the victims. So I mean, it's this foggy area where it's not the institution of the police, but the police didn't really step up as much as they probably should have. And like, I don't think we should blame the institution because one of them was just a psycho, but it's also it's not just what happened, but it's the response. Did the Sydney police respond to the situation in a manner that showed dignity to the community? And I think that's the
Well,
big
there was a
asterisk.
discussion. The Australian Federal Police had initially indicated that they will respect the wishes of the Mardi Gras and will not be attending. There were some conversations with New South Wales Police, worth noting that they have been marching in this parade for over 20 years. It seems like Sydney Mardi Gras and the New South Wales Police have reached a bit of an agreement. And the New South Wales Police, of whom many do identify as gay, bisexual, and lesbian, etc., will now be able to march in plain clothes. So they seem to have split the difference, as it were, in inviting them to march. Now, Australia has been dogged by accusations of homophobia and systemic homophobia against their police services, especially in light of the serial killer a couple of years ago, where there was systemic failures in policing. Lots going on. Now, we are going to be jumping to our first track of the day. And that is going to be it's going to be Hunting Buffalo by Noreen Braun. We will be joining Kevin just after this.
With our breath held silent on the brain, follow tracks from rolling plains, spiky grass and wild furry manes, scout shouts out there below. Crunching sound of hunting buffalo. Loaded guns and arrows point there. Carts and circle camps anointed. Shots ring out and startle many. Stampede bursts of thunderous frenzy. Bulls bellow on trampled dead, ripped on sharp horned, thrashing, jerking heads. Garden tossed through whirls of dust. Chant and force a final thrust. Wives and old men's carts are squeezing, crammed with meat and hunger, urging winter freezing. Now these are the days of old, when we were. Of old. We're forever hunting buffalo. We gave thanks in days of old.
welcome to Cambria, home of Canada's Queen Media, or welcome back, I should say. Still with me, as always, all these years later, is the incredible Sebastian.
That's me.
That is you.
And I did that.
We are joined by a friend of ours, longtime friend of ours, and a local business owner, which is really the gist of today's conversation, as mentioned, mm-hmm. at the top of the hour. Kevin, the owner-operator of, I don't know why I clapped there, it's terrible to sound, the owner-operator of Stroked Eagle and menswear, and I mean, I believe you cater to more than just men, store in Ottawa. Thank you, Kevin, so much for joining us.
Hey, Luke. Hey, Seb. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Now, for those who maybe aren't familiar about your store, do you want to give them a bit of a brief, and then we'll dive into the topic?
Sure. Well, you nailed it pretty good. We are a men's fashion or male-identifying fashion store mainly. We're pretty much known for our funky accessories like socks, and we have a little bit of underwear, and we also do skincare and shaving, and we literally just opened up about 6 months ago an event space.
Hmm. Excellent. We'll be diving into that event space a little later. I know that you folks, you're available online, strokedego.ca as well. We're not sponsored, but I know that I know whenever you mention things that are sort of ad sounding, they're like, oh, is this a secret local? No, there was no socks slid under the table. But rather, I think when we saw a post from you, really speaking to how traffic just hasn't returned to those pre-pandemic levels. Mm-hmm. And, the queer community, the community at large, I think, wants to support more local businesses, especially local gay-owned and operated businesses. So what's the picture been looking like for you since the pandemic?
Yeah, that post, I tell you guys, there are days when you're feeling really good about things, and then there are days when you're feeling a little down. And I was one of those days, I think I kind of lost my control and put the post up there. It's been a little tough, to be quite honest with you. Obviously, the pandemic shut us down for a little bit. Thankfully, though, during the pandemic, we were doing a lot of online orders. And I mean, you guys are familiar with the store, but for those who aren't, we're on the second floor, and there's a little landing on top of the stairs, and then it's separated by a glass wall and doors that get into the store. So people were great. They would be placing online orders. We'd prepare them, and then we'd literally just set them on the outside on the landing, and people would come up. Obviously, not even close to what we were making before the pandemic, but it was enough to pay the operations at least. And then, of course, that kind of opened up a little bit, and then we were hit with the double whammy of the protest with the trucker convoy, and that shut us down for about 5 weeks. And a little bit afterwards, and maybe even a little bit before, because of the news creating a little bit of a hype about it. And with that, unfortunately, that killed us. At least we were making a little bit of money through online orders and pickups in the store. But when that was going on, nobody wanted to come downtown. So we literally were, running on fumes for that. And during the time, you eat up your reserves, and you unfortunately have to put things on credit, which you don't necessarily want to do. And we're still trying to claw our way back to get things pretty much caught up and back to where they were pre-pandemic.
I know that it's evident that you are certainly feeling the pinch of the moment. And I suppose my question is, I know personally the idea of, buying a new wardrobe in today's climate and the economy where it's at is just not possible. Are you seeing discretionary spending or clothing spending from your customers going down? Are your clients just not spending as much or coming as often?
You know what I think it's more about? Our average sale is still quite high. It's just the number of people walking through the door is what's being affected. So it's more about our walk-in count as opposed to our actual sales. So when people are coming in, they're seeing what they want and they're picking it up, and they're happy with their purchases. But if we can't get them into the store, then obviously, you can't, entice them with anything, or they won't be able to find something that they fall in love with. So it's more about walk-ins for us, I believe.
Do you think the shift to the government in specific, because you're very close to a lot of the government buildings, not the big ones in Gatineau, but still a lot of the government buildings sort of surround you. And there was sort of a shift to remote and hybrid work. So there's just fewer people downtown overall. Do you see that as being a factor?
Oh, absolutely, Seb. Again, for those not familiar, we're about four blocks from Parliament Hill, right on Bank Street. So surrounding us are a lot of the office towers, which, have been in the news lately because it looks like the government's trying to offload some of them. But the government still isn't back. You hear word that it's being mandated that they work 2 or 3 days a week. That's not correct. It's pretty much up to every individual manager. And I know quite a few people that don't even work in the office at all. Like they're working remotely 100% of the time. So, that's really affected us. Thankfully, our weekends have still been good because we are a destination store for a lot of our, very supportive clientele, which we definitely appreciate. But, some Monday and Tuesdays especially, you can shoot a cannon down Bank Street and not hit anything.
I think it's worth noting for our listeners that your location is really in the middle of the historic gay village of Ottawa. And this is something that I know a lot of gay villages have really struggled with, which is kind of, really it's that foot traffic that you mentioned. We're just not getting as much community happening in these places as we used to. And I just want to draw a line here with what where you mentioned the federal government. One of the challenges that Ottawa, more than maybe other cities like Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver, sort of suffers from is it's a bedroom community. But a lot of the civil servants, they're the second largest employer in the city, live in the suburbs, commute in for work in theory. Now they're all working remotely and then leave again. So, how is the village doing in all this? When you look down the street at your fellow village stores, is it a similar picture down the street?
Well, looking down the street, village or not, there's a lot of vacancies, first of all. Mainly suffering were the restaurants, but a lot of pretty well-known stores that have been around for quite a while have either relocated or closed. I checked about, I don't know, not too long ago, I walked my block and we're sitting at about a 40% vacancy in our block alone. As for the village, honestly, Luke, other than, maybe the pub on Somerset Tees, who else is there that's queer owned anymore? Like Venus Envy is gone. They suffered the fire, and with COVID, they just decided to work out of their warehouse, so they're not actually in the village anymore. Wicked Wanda's is still there. I mean, it's not queer owned or operated, but they're definitely, allies, so I would consider them one. But other than those two businesses, like I can't honestly think of any other ones that are still really flourishing.
I think you're onto something. I know that in those big urban centers, Montreal, Vancouver, the Davie Village, Church Street, Saint-Catherine, they face also the predicament of really high rental rates in those areas. Now, Ottawa, likewise, had pretty skyrocket high rental rates for retail spaces, especially ground floor, street level, where we're seeing the office crisis really kind of impacting, and you said the government's offloading some of its buildings. But in terms of, maybe a queer person starting a new business, is even getting a space on the street financially feasible? Like, is that something that new entrepreneurs could even potentially afford?
I personally can say that my landlords have been absolutely spectacular with me. They've been very supportive, and I totally appreciate them. I guess all I can say is if I were given the opportunity today to start a business in this location on the ground floor, would I do it? And my answer would be 100% no. It's too much of a risk right now.
I think to a certain degree there has been talks that there's just been a shift in how, like, on a fundamental level, how society is functioning. So, like, if you look at photos of the Bank Street region back in the 60s, a lot of those storefronts used to be places like barbers, greengrocers, bakeries. It was more
Bookstores.
storefronts for the people who lived in the area to walk into and just get their basic needs met. And then as the area got built up with banks and government buildings, offices, corporations, that kind of the government. There's a few remote offices for the universities in the downtown core. A lot of those storefronts started catering to the commuters, and they started doing things like taco stands and just places you could pop into quickly for lunch. And the idea of it being a living neighborhood kind of faded in the background, and it was more like a service neighborhood to the suburbs. And I have seen people sort of speculate. I mean, we're talking about the future now, so you never know. But there has been speculation that a lot of these spaces may eventually return back to being neighborhood spaces again for locals. But unfortunately, that could create issues, because getting from here to there, like this would work out for you better in the long run if it did turn into a neighborhood space, not just a pop-in space for commuters. But you would need to weather the societal shift that might take like 5 to 20 years for that to actually happen. And I don't know. I question whether or not, like, do you even think that there is a space for something like a gay neighborhood if places like that are predominantly local again, and the rents are just too high? Because it used to be that, you know, neighborhoods or villages would pop up where the rents were low, and people who are typically low income would pool together.
I think you put the nail on the head with a couple of points there, Seb. One thing I would say is what really frustrates me is when they talk about having a vacancy tax on residential areas to force people to rent it out, lower the rent, whatever the, you know, what they need to do to put people in there. Otherwise, there's a penalty if it's vacant for so long. They don't do that with commercial. And people can absolutely stay vacant for as long as they want.
Yeah.
They don't need to lower their rents. And a lot of the time, I mean, I'm not an accountant, so, you know, I could get fact checked here. But from my understanding, a lot of the time they can use their vacancies and write off the expenses. To me, that's one of the issues right there. They're not incentivized to lower their rent to allow people to come in.
Right.
On the other hand, the smaller mom and pop people that may own a building or two, and they're not the big corporations like the city has, they need to just get it rented because they have bills to pay. So they're not super selective of what they allow to rent their place. So, I mean, if you walk the street, you're going to notice a lot of, you know, maybe not family friendly stores, maybe, one too many barbershops. There's not a good mix of things to draw people down. Hmm. So, I mean, that's a bit of a concern as well. And finally, to the point about whether or not there's an area for, you know, a gay village, I think that one is kind of a double-edged sword, because a lot of the time queer folks are more or less welcome anywhere now. There's not a need to have as much of a safe space where people can walk down the street in a dedicated village and hold hands with their partner, for example. People don't necessarily, you know, see it as much of a problem as they did maybe 40 years ago in other areas. So they would come to the gay village to be a little bit more accepted and not have to face, you know, any sort of discrimination in non-gay areas.
I think you've hit a good point there, Kevin. When we look at 40 years ago to now, for example, we've reached out to Stats Canada and a few others. We're going to do a bit of a dive into hate crimes and the trends that are happening with hate crimes in Canada. So we'll dive into that in a later week. But I think the idea of where queer folks gather, where they live, where they patron businesses, that has significantly changed in the last couple of decades. You know, it used to be that for a long time that the actual majority of gay folks lived in major urban centers, because the rural and small towns were not as accepting. It was a more hostile place. So queer folks migrated